is Nightline.
Tonight.
What do we want?
Answers!
When do we want them?
Now!
Heartbreak and outrage. A university in turmoil after a popular administrator dies by suicide, accusing colleagues of bullying.
I absolutely feel like she felt like she had to be Superwoman.
The university denying any wrongdoing, but the controversy putting a spotlight on Black women in academia.
It's a struggle to be respected. There's so many obstacles, and often the higher you ascend, the lonelier it gets.
The unique pressures and the younger generation fighting for change.
We're not alone. We have one another. We have this rich community that we can lean on and that we can support.
Plus, Fletcher, known for the headline making Becky's So Hot, now celebrating the release of a new album and tour. Why she says her music is so personal.
It's always been like a really a tell-all confessional, as if you were in my therapy session with me. Diary entry.
And the private health battle that changed everything.
Was there a moment you thought you might not be able to perform again?
And Rosie the Riveters get their goals.
Nightline.
Thanks for joining us. Tonight, Antoinette Candia Bailey's story sparking a national conversation among Black women in academia. When she was named Vice President of Student Affairs in Lincoln University in Missouri, she thought she'd landed her dream job. But her loved ones say that dream soon soured. Here's ABC's Janae Norman.
What do we want?
Answers!
When do we want them?
Now!
Heartbreak and outrage at Lincoln University. The Missouri HBCU, founded by former enslaved people more than 150 years ago, now at the center of a national controversy.
We will honor Dr. Bailey. She will not be dismissed by this institution.
This was the scene around the college town just weeks after senior administrator Antoinette Candia Bailey died by suicide in January.
We need the university to know that we're hurting and we need some type of help and transparency in order for us to move forward.
Why do you think it struck such a nerve and sparked such a conversation?
It was shocking. And I think there was a lot of fear that if the experiences that Black women are going through are not being paid attention to, that they can have really devastating results.
Before her death, the vice president of student affairs, known affectionately around campus as Dr. Bonnie, alleged that she was harassed and bullied by her colleagues, including the university president, John B. Mosley.
Her death rocked the nation even beyond academic spaces, but I think for Black women in academia, it was definitely a wake-up call.
In a statement, the university called Candia Bailey's death tragic and hired an outside firm to investigate her claims. The university president, Mosley, was recently reinstated after what the board of curators called an exhaustive independent investigation, which found no evidence that Dr. Mosley bullied Dr. Candia Bailey. Those close to her reacting to the investigation's results.
My confidence in the thoroughness of the investigation is zero. Bonnie was not a person to mince words, or if she felt bullied, if she felt unheard, unseen, then that's what it was. It's frustrating.
ABC News reached out to the university and Mosley and didn't hear back. In a statement, Mosley said, "Our thoughts and prayers have been and continue to be with Dr. Bailey's family, friends, and our campus community. I am grateful to the Board of Curators for their faith in me and their vote of confidence." Candia Bailey's tragic death, putting a harsh spotlight on the struggles and hurdles that many Black women say they face in higher education and beyond. Social media lighting up.
The suicide of Dr. Antoinette Candia Bailey has me hot. I mean, hot like pissed hot.
With women sharing their reactions.
I see myself and so many of you guys in her.
And their own experiences.
Black women are taught to be strong all the time, and nobody wants to care about our pain. It is literally killing us.
In recent months, some of the most prominent Black women at the highest levels of academia publicly ousted.
Texas A&M has agreed to pay Dr. Kathleen McElroy as part of a settlement agreement.
Harvard President Claudine Gay is stepping down.
Recent data shows Black women account for about 2% of tenured professors in colleges and universities across the country.
Tenure is the highest status that you can achieve at a university. So Black women get hired, but they aren't getting tenure, and they aren't being moved through that process.
That uphill battle, something Candia Bailey was aware of. After graduating from Lincoln University in 1998, the Chicago native spent more than 20 years climbing the ladder of academia. Here she is in 2016 at a thesis competition at North Carolina A&T State University.
Attempts need to be addressed to look at how African American women can increase and advance in higher education. These factors also link to being treated like the help, the outsider within, keeping them away from the table.
I love the orange because, you know, it's kind of vibrant, like her personality.
LaDonna Flanagan is Candia Bailey's aunt.
Bonnie was a very caring and kind, selfless person. She loved very hard, and I know that's why so many people loved and gravitated to her.
When she got hired by Lincoln University, it was a dream come true.
Basically captured the heart of our relationship, which was always laughing.
Omega Tillman and Candia Bailey were sorority sisters.
When she got the interview, she sent us this text message like, I'm trying to get the VP job and I really, really need you to pray because I really want this.
But the sweet dream soon soured. After 9 months on the job, Candia Bailey was terminated. 5 days later, the 49-year-old died by suicide, leaving behind a scathing note where friends say she alleged being bullied at work.
Basically, it says, you intentionally harassed and bullied me and got satisfaction from sitting back to determine how you would ensure I failed as an employee.
I absolutely feel like she felt like she had to be Superwoman. She had in her mind, I've got to make sure that I don't fail. Because I feel like that's what they're expecting.
Pressures, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones knows all too well.
It's a struggle to be respected. It's a struggle to be heard. There's so many obstacles, and often the higher you ascend, the lonelier it gets.
Hannah-Jones made headlines for initially being denied tenure at the University of North Carolina's Journalism School, her alma mater, in 2021. After some university board members reportedly opposed her appointment because of her involvement with her award-winning 1619 project, which chronicled the history of Black Americans.
You can play the game, and then they'll just change the rules of the game on you. That is the frustration that so many Black women have. Even when we have tried to make ourselves undeniable, in the end, we can be denied, and it has nothing to do with our work ethic, our ambition, or our talent.
The New York Times journalist ended up taking a tenure position at Howard University, an HBCU.
We're talking about academia, but more broadly, do you think that there is more work to be done in corporate America, in just America, to make it where Black women can not only be, but thrive?
These conversations are not about handouts. They're not about giving Black women something that they don't have the ability to earn on themselves. It's simply about being fair and allowing Black women to live up to their full potential so that our entire society can benefit.
Everybody experiences stress related to employment, but study after study after study has shown that Black women specifically experience disproportionate amounts of stress.
Clinical psychologist Inger Burnett Ziegler studies the mental health of Black women. According to the CDC, Black and other women of color tend to be evaluated more harshly than men and white women as they navigate harmful stereotypes at work.
The stereotype of the angry Black woman, the stereotype of the strong Black woman, the stereotype of the hypersexual Black women.
All this, experts say, can lead some Black women to face mental health struggles.
The number one thing that I believe Black women can do to protect their mental health is establish very clear boundaries. Being a strong Black woman can come with taking on too much, feeling like you just can't take it anymore. And often we don't recognize it until it's gone too far.
Meanwhile, the next generation of Black women academics are forging their own community. Ijama Kola is a history professor at the University of Notre Dame.
Cohort Sisters!
She founded Cohort Sisters 4 years ago.
So that's where Cohort Sisters really came in, this idea that we're not alone. We have one another, we have this community, this rich community of doctoral scholars that we can lean on and that we can support.
It really had me like reflecting on my own experience with mental health and what kind of resources I had access to as a PhD student.
If you are going through something, just post it on the platform. People will encourage you. We might not have an answer, but somebody will say, it's okay, sis. You're gonna be okay. And sometimes that is all you need to hear. It doesn't matter if there are more of us with doctoral degrees, if we are not well, if we don't have the internal capacity to navigate the spaces that we're in, but also if we don't work to systematically change the culture of the environments that we inhabit.
Back in Missouri, Lincoln University acknowledging that there is more work to be done, writing in a statement, "This tragedy has forced us to grapple more fully with issues facing Lincoln and our individual students and employees, ranging from mental health support to employee work and relationships."
What do you think justice looks like for Dr. Candia Bailey?
I don't think it's possible. What we can do, though, is to try to create an environment where we don't have to have what happened to Dr. Bailey anymore.
For those who knew and loved Candia Bailey, they're calling on change in her memory.
I'm hoping that response would lead to a larger conversation around the country because so many women may be suffering.
If you or anyone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, free confidential help is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Call or text the National Lifeline at 988. Our thanks to Janae for that report. And when we return, pop star Fletcher, opening up about the health scare she says nearly ended her career, and her personal new music, including Eras of Us.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The GLAAD Media Award-winning pop star has just dropped a brand new album called In Search of the Antidote. She sat down with ABC's Rhiannon Alley for a catch-up.
We want to welcome Fletcher back to Nightline.
Thank you so much.
So we spoke with you here on Nightline about a year ago. And at the time, it was a really lovely interview. You talked about finding freedom. You talked about growing up as a queer child and not seeing any representation. So what has changed the last year? Tell us what growth you've seen in yourself the last year.
Oh, wow. I've been on quite a journey over the last year. I actually took a lot of time off last year. I was quite sick. I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and so I had to cancel a bunch of tours. I sort of disappeared off of social media for a while. It was just having to like really sit with myself and just kind of figure out who I was outside of all of that, outside of all of the noise. And so much growth like comes on the other side of that, of you just like feeling in touch with yourself and connecting with yourself.
Was it difficult to talk about being diagnosed with Lyme disease, and how are you doing now?
I think it was definitely difficult. I think I went through a period of not being sure if I wanted to share that and wanted to be open about it. And I didn't really want this to become a headline, but at the same time, it's been a part of the journey, and it's been like allowed me to just look at things in a new light and see myself in a new light and ultimately just become like a more healthier, healed version of myself and come back to this in a way that feels like actually sustainable and like I'm listening to my body. And I think that's been the beauty in that, of just connecting with myself more deeply.
And was there a moment you thought you might not be able to perform again? How does it feel to be back doing what you love?
To be back doing what I love is like such a dream come true, because there was a period of time where I was like, I don't know if I could do it again. You know, I wrote my album throughout that whole period, and the album and the music and the songwriting was like such a big part of the antidote for me.
So what does this new album tell us about where Fletcher is right now in her life?
My music has always been like a really a tell-all confessional, as if you were in my therapy session with me, diary entry. And sometimes it's gotten me in trouble and I've overshared a little bit too much and taken things quite far. But at the same time, it's also that honesty and that vulnerability is like what I used to crave so much from artists when I was little. I want the real stuff. You know, I want the struggles and I want the difficulty and the honesty. And I think that's always been a through line in my music.
One of the tracks on the album is called Lead Me On. Tell us about this particular song. What was the motivation behind this one?
I think this song is like, it has a few different meanings for me. This song, you know, it could be a song about being led on by somebody and taking sort of like the bare minimum, and just this sort of like, if this feeling of just wanting somebody to pay attention to you.
Let's talk about the last decade or so, from X Factor to where you are now. What would you tell that teenage girl looking back after all you've been through these years?
I would tell her to trust herself, because I think we live in a world that there's so much noise, there's so much outside noise. And I would tell her to trust herself.
What's next? You have a tour coming out for the new album. Tell us.
I leave after this, actually. I'm going on tour. I'm touring Europe. My album just came out. And then Australia and New Zealand later this year. And then a North American tour in the fall. So come find me at a show so I can hug you and say I love you. And
well, we love the new album. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
And good luck on your tour as well.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rhiannon. When we return, the ladies known as Rosies, rewarded at last for helping America win World War II.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much I know.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And finally tonight, the Rosie the Riveters of World War II.
Nearly 30 Rosies in total presented today with the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor. The women now ranging from their 90s up to 107.
They were housewives. They were mothers turned war heroes.
Their hands-on labor on machinery and equipment supported the war effort.
But these are the women that built our ships and our bombs.
Mae Cryer built B-17s and B-29 planes as a teenager.
And I'm so proud to be able to symbolically accept this medal for all of you. I think it's wonderful.
Brava, ladies. That's Nightline. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.
Wednesday night on ABC. Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.